the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on iTunes and at davedameshek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal Dave, Dave Dameshek. What's going down? I hope all's well wherever you are. Welcome to the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available as always on iTunes and at NFL.com/Sheck.
S-H-E-K, Sheck, Sheck, Sheck.
You know my rule here in Studio 66, no jive talk. And I'm not going to jive you. Yes, we have the greatest duo of title games that I can remember, at least on paper. But I feel the whole thing in my heart is bittersweet because I can't ignore the fact that this is the last anything close to a decent Sunday that we have. The Super Bowl is a show, and there's going to be Bruno Mars and 50-year-old Chili Peppers, who may or may not be wearing clothes. That's a show, and it's something unto itself. This is our last football weekend proper. It makes me sad. I do want to mention, though, in between the title games and the Super Bowl, of course, is the Pro Bowl. And leading up to that on NFL Network, next Tuesday, the 21st, a one-hour show with Chris Rowe starting at 8 o'clock Eastern. And then the next show on the 22nd, a three-hour extravaganza. It's the big, the big draft-em-up, Dion versus Jerry Rice. And they're going to be drafting teams just like we used to do out on the out in the schoolyard, just like the NHL fellas do it in their all-star game as well. So be on the lookout for that. That also 8 p.m. Eastern, and that's Dion and Jerry Rice picking pretty much the entire group. They're two respective teams, and so that'll be fun to see how that shakes out. But all right, listen, let's talk about these two aforementioned title games right now with my main man seated to my immediate right from NFL.com and NFL Network. It's Adam Rank. What's the poop, fella?
Hey, boss. Thanks for having me.
What a pleasure.
I feel pretty good about my 2013 Shecky Award winner for Best Sports Weekend being the NFL title games.
That did break just right, huh?
That did. That was perfect. It was foresight into knowing that those were going to be the matchups most likely.
And I would have been wrong because what I said, I'll take divisional round over championship weekend anytime. But those four games, while obviously important, weren't the juiciest court. That wasn't the juiciest court. That the wild card games were much better.
Yeah, there was it was an opposite from the previous year where I think that was the case where the divisional round games were a little bit better. But yeah, if you looked over the last weekend, I think by the time that LeGarrette Blount broke that huge runoff against the Colts there, I was already blacking out, and then kind of snoozed through the 49ers game, which we predicted was going to be a blowout, and certainly was. Well, I guess it was closer than maybe
the score.
That's
the one I had a sense of, yeah. And yet I was the furthest away from the final score on that one. I came really scarily close by my standards, immodestly. I really did come really close to the final scores on the first three games. Winner, but into the actual final score. In fact, I think I got the... I got one game on the nose.
I think you nailed one. It was the...
Wasn't the second game.
I think it was the...
The first game of the day. What was the first... No, it wasn't the Broncos.
Seahawks.
I think that's the...
Seahawks.
Who knows? Who cares? That's
whoever
in the rearview mirror. But by the way, you mentioned last year's playoffs, and I want to mention that I caught up with a couple of guys that were key members of that 2012 playoffs. Roddy White of the Atlanta Falcons, Terrell Suggs of the world champion Baltimore Ravens. I caught up with them earlier today, kibitzed about all of it, about Ray Lewis's dancing here and there and everywhere before the game, what role it played in things, whether or not he actually dislikes Tom Brady or if that's a put on, what it means, all the pressure of the play, all of it. We covered it all in our latest latest segment of Inside Out, where I throw the fan suppositions at the guys actually in the locker room, and they tell us whether they're true or not. So be on the lookout for that on NFL.com/Sheck, but also we'll play a portion of that for you coming up here. Right now, let's say hello to the guy who is seated directly across from me here in Studio 66. We last spoke with him 2 weeks ago. I think we missed him last week, but anyway, at NFL.com, always he's doing the power rankings. He's doing his picks. He's sticking with them through the postseason here. It's Elliot Harrison. What's the poop with you?
Well, I did miss last week, and I think it's because I got wasted by Hank in the best guest What was the Shecky
Award? Oh, you were down and out. You couldn't pull it together for that. You felt sad for yourself.
I felt good about how I did against my other opponents, but from what I heard, Handsome just...
Well, in the Shecky Award, we did the best recurring guest, and we do it by player and non-player, and A.J. Hawk won for best recurring guest as a player. But for our usual analysts or pals or whatever we call them, some people, there's a fair amount of controversy. A lot of people didn't like Handsome Hank's inclusion in that. They feel like he's more a part of the core group. I don't know. I don't know if that's exactly right. Either way, yeah, you did nicely. Mark Sessler of Around the League came in last place. That's the thing, and it's like the Pro Bowl thing. Imagine these guys are much decorated fellas at the highest level of pro football, but somebody in this little Deion Jerry Rice pickup game thing is going to get picked last.
What and do you guys? But I'm curious what both of y'all think about this. You know, we just got done with fantasy season, and then we go straight into Wild Card Weekend and all this stuff. What do you guys think of this whole Pro Bowl thing? Like, are you excited about it? Do you think it's cool? Are you just glad they're doing something to tweak it? What do you think?
Well, listen, I didn't like it in its former state. It had become a ridiculous show. Obviously, I would rather watch, and I'm not joking when I say I'd rather watch the Superstars competition. Just get all the players out there and do sort of like what the NBA does. Have them sprint, see who does the best 40 times, see who can bench press the most. I'd rather watch that than watch guys basically have a scrimmage against a defense that's going half speed. I do think that... maybe I'm too optimistic, but I do feel like that these guys, and when you talk to players, the one thing they do have is respect for not just their peers, but for the guys that are just retired, the guys that are real luminaries. The current players love Deion Sanders. They have great respect for Jerry Rice. And I do think they'll have a hard time. Maybe they won't, but I feel like at least some of them will have a little bit of dignity and respect for those guys. I mean, you think Deion Sanders is going to say, listen, no jive, fellas. I want you to try on defense. Is Darrell Revis going to say, no, I'm not going to?
Really? Like one of those?
I don't know. I don't know. We'll see.
If one of those players said, if Deion said, I want you to go try on defense, I'd be like, you never did.
That's a good touche.
Really?
Touche. What's Deion's response to that?
Here comes Cleveland Gary. I'm going to lay on the ground.
Well, a fair point. You know what I always say. I'd rather the two worst teams be playing on that off week. I'd rather you play the loser bowl. Like I've said, the first overall draft pick, the second overall draft pick, two teams, they play one another. The winner of that game gets the first overall pick. Now we got stakes. Now you're fighting for something. It would be a wonderful TV event. Everyone would gather around the tube to look at it. Listen, people who say, who would care about watching the two worst teams? First of all, as I say, we only at that point have one football game left, which is the Super Bowl. So of course you need the methadone to come down from the spike, you know, that you've been on all season long. So one, you'd watch it for that reason. And two, as you know, go to NFL.com right now. Our pals Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks have their mock drafts up. And listen, that is sports nerd porn. And I'm not saying that in a derogatory way unless I'm making fun of myself, because, man, I eat that up. I love watching. I love reading mock drafts and thinking how it's going to go and so on and so forth. That would be my solution. EH, what do you think? You think? I mean, I think it'll be fun to watch. The thing that'll be neat is the watching the actual draft. Yeah. I don't know if the game is as interesting as the draft is.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool, and I'm glad they did something to tweak it. I do want to add to your example about Deion laying on the ground. So Cleveland Gary would have jumped over him and then kicked the ball out of his own hands, because Cleveland Gary could not hold on to the football to save his life. But I like it. I like the idea. I like the strategy of it. And I would love it if Deion went all secondary. I would. I'd love it, because the Pro Bowl has such a reputation for being such an offensive game. You're not going to take a pass rusher.
Well, Why take a running back?
Take a corner.
It's funny. Well, Rank is right that maybe you could throw that back in Deion's face. But, yeah, if you're a cornerback, then the gold standard – well, I mean, we can argue about that. I know that the three of us have talked about Rod Woodson or Mel Blount or a couple other names and who you'd most want to have.
We talked about it with Rod.
Right. But Deion Sanders is in the top three or five cover corners ever.
Absolutely.
And so if he says, I want you guys to try, you know, what Patrick Peterson's going to be like, yeah, who are you, old man? He's not going to do that. He's going to try.
Wearing 21.
Yeah, exactly. They love him, I'm sure, and want to impress him, if not anybody else on the face of the earth. They're going to want to please their coach. All right.
What if some cornerback showed up in number 37 for Deion Sanders? Like, yeah, former Ravens cornerback.
They're the
Why are you running this team?
I remember watching you play. You really were not that good.
Could you imagine like somebody like the Honey Badger who's that young being like, I'm sorry, you played for a team other than the Ravens? I don't recall that at all.
That is a funny thing. A lot of guys, a lot of professional athletes don't care as much. I always say there's an inverse relationship between how good you are at the sport and how much you're interested in watching other people do it. You know, I am not a great, I'm not a professional athlete, although I was for 11 glorious years in the NFL. But those aside, I love it. I love watching all sports, but I think a lot of professional athletes don't care much about the history of their game.
Well, it's like you.
It would be interesting to see just how bad it is to quiz. Like, do you know who Troy Aikman is? Do you know Joe Montana? Because I guarantee you that would be a funny thing to unearth, although it wouldn't look good for the league. But it would be funny if Ryan Tannehill has no idea who Joe Montana is.
If all the guys think that Jerry Rice's number was 19, the number he wore with the Broncos.
Right.
What about, but you know, you talk about the guys who are professional, you know, don't like to watch their sport. I think it's similar to the way that you don't like to watch people play Connect Four.
That's true. Because I get a taste, and I want to get into it.
Yeah.
And I retired from competitive for many years ago. And
at the top of your game.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I had nothing left to prove. Why continue? Because you know what? The sport of Connect Four has done so much for me. To me, to continue doing it is disrespectful. And I'm not going to be one of these, like a prize fighter who keeps getting back into the ring to his own detriment, to his own legacy, and to his own physical well-being. I'm not going to do that to myself. Right. I'm not going to fall into that same trap.
I always thought the toughest Connect Four strategy to defend or the best way to win was to be on the second level and then start a diagonal stream. So to start the bottom of the diagonal stream on the second level, because people, they're only looking for you to go diagonal when you start from the bottom up.
Well, all I can tell you is, let me just tell you, I got my kids their first Connect Four board, and they both, not surprisingly, but it did make my heart sore. They both have the gift, because I've said this before. You can learn, mm-hmm. but you can watch someone's first game of four, and you can tell if they have it or not.
You can improve.
No, that's one of those things. I'm not going. What am I going to yell at them when I wanted to see what they had, and instantaneously they got it. They got the vision.
It's about
are they willing to put in the work? You know,
yeah.
It's like Johnny Football. He's got the gifts. Is he willing to pay the price?
Well, just
it's
like,
one of those things too. It's like if you're Bronco Nagurski's kid and you're not very good at football,
yeah.
it's
mm-hmm.
a tough one. But now it seems like your kids are following in the tradition of the Manning family.
I want them to be. I've told them, and I'll tell you, I want them to be happy. I'm not going to push them into being competitive four players. If that's their passion, so be it.
Are you going to send them to Jay Novacek's Connect Four camp?
I'm not going to make any hard and fast decisions right
okay.
now. That's what I'm trying to say. All right, let's talk about the playoff games. These dandy two, and of course the story that everybody has seized upon, myself included, old school on one side, new school on the other. There's actually a new piece coming up, I think later in the week, depends on when you're listening to this, a new reality check where I sort of break that down. And I know, on Monday's podcast this week, Chris Wessling and Handsome Hank and I kibitzed about this. And I think Handsome Hank thinks I'm getting a little hyperbolic to make a point. I don't think 60 minutes of the Super Bowl, if Colin Kaepernick or Russell Wilson defeat whichever guy comes out of the AFC side, I say that, you know, this, we're at the crossroads with quarterbacks here now, mm-hmm. you know, at that position. I think that if the Niners win this year, but let's say Cap gets it this year and some combination of Andrew Luck and Cam and RG3, what if they win the next one? What if 2 years in a row you have the so-called new age, the mobile QB under center there? Don't you think, when you look at people, Handsome said, I don't think there ever not be a call for a tall, strong-armed quarterback who can stand in the pocket. Well, yeah, listen, you know, nobody ever thought that there wouldn't be fullbacks on every football team, and there was never a notion that you wouldn't have head-on kickers, and all those things go the way, you know. As a matter of fact, Vince Lombardi begat Chuck Knoll, both of whom love ground and pound, but then Bill Walsh came along and pass first became the way. So this idea that things won't change because you haven't seen it yet, I think that the prevailing way to play the position could be determined over this year and next. And in fact, really, maybe Flacco and Eli have delayed that because people more, here comes Johnny Football, you know, Blake Bortles out of Central Florida, you know, so on and so forth. Marcus Mariota next year. I think that is the kind of quarterback. EH, how say you?
Well, I think what's going on in the league right now is certainly conducive to it. Number one, coaches have very short lifespans in the league. We've seen coaches get fired after 1 year or 2 years. So you want to win now. And you can win now with an athletic quarterback because the defense, especially one that when they run like zone read and stuff, because the defense is forced to play 11 on 11. You know, that guy is a threat. Secondly, if you're trying to win now, you're not as worried about your guy getting hurt. And that was always the concern with the quarterbacks that ran a lot. It's like, oh, yeah, you can do that for a little while. But, you know, come year three or four, they're going to learn they can't do that anymore. Well, how much is a coach going to care if his job is on the line? You know, and then the win now mentality.
It's an interesting point.
I don't know that teams are as patient to wait, you know, 6-7 years for a quarterback to develop.
Yeah.
And with the lack of practice time that these offensive lines seem to be getting worse. And if quarterbacks can't create their own separation in the pocket, forget if they're able to run like Randall Cunningham and gain 1,000 yards a season. Just being able to escape pressure is going to be a huge thing, which is why a guy like Johnny Manziel is going to come in and have an immediate impact, because no matter how well the Browns line plays, Manziel's going to be able to stretch plays just with his legs. Well, you see it. I mean, you see it all the time with Ben Roethlisberger. You need quarterbacks who are like that, and these guys who are statues. There's going to be no use for them, just like the way that they don't draft running backs in the first round anymore.
That's both of you with great points on that. So, all right. So now let's jump and talk about that game. It makes sense, even though it's the second game, we're talking about that kind of quarterback. Who do you got? To me, I'll say this. Should we a black tie behind the glass? Let's do it as the red challenge flag segment. Let's go out. This is our last red challenge flag segment of the 2013/14 season. This is when we make our picks. Hit it, Black Tie. Red challenge flag picks. All right, fellas. Yes, I am going to ask one of you for your pick. The other will have the opportunity to throw the red challenge flag and disagree. Let me just say in advance, to me, think about if this game were on a neutral site. If it were in Candlestick, the world would pick San Francisco, I think. If it were on a neutral site, I think 90% of people would pick the Niners. The only reason that I hear anybody taking the Seahawks right now is because of the, and it's for real, the home field advantage. But I think that's the reason everybody's picking them. And while I think over the course of, 17 regular season weeks and then into the postseason, we get swept up. I think it's the product of having worked here now for a few years in talking about football every week during the season. When you stand back, you don't shoot your mouth off week after week. React to what you just saw. Then you get swept up in it. There gets to be a certain momentum. And Jay Cutler really looks good. How good does he look? Really, really good. They might win the division. Look out for that Bears team. And by the time they kick off next, the Bears are a legitimate threat for the Super Bowl. And there's ebb and flow to the season. But I do buy, you know, I think like everybody, the idea of peaking at the right time. And I don't know if it's something mystical with the Niners. Rather, practically, they just happen to get healthy at the right time. Crabtree coming back and so on. And Alden Smith getting back up to speed. That makes them the team that is playing the best right now. And in the same way, the Seahawks do not look like their best right now. So, that my pick is clear. I am going to take the Niners here. Although I do respect that home field and what the 12th man can do. Rank, I give it to you. NFC champion 2013, 49ers, Seahawks, bitter rivals. Who you got?
I got the San Francisco 49ers, and one of the reasons you just touched on is when Michael Crabtree came back, Colin Kaepernick started playing a lot better. And to me, when you look at the two quarterbacks, very good. Colin Kaepernick's good. Russell Wilson's good. But look who the receivers are.
Yes.
Kaepernick has three legitimate receiving threats with Crabtree, Anquan Boldin, who plays his best in the postseason. Well, yeah, I guess you could say Vernon Davis plays his best in the postseason, too. And you compare them to the playmakers that the Seahawks have. Percy Harvin's been battling injuries. He's not practicing on Wednesday. Golden Tate's fine. Doug Baldwin, he's okay. But these guys aren't Pro Bowl caliber type guys, guys who are going to turn the game around. So I give San Francisco a huge advantage there. And I also give San Francisco the advantage in the coaching department too. And because I watched both of these guys go head-to-head in the Pac-10, and Pete Carroll had superior talent with all those SC teams. Jim Harbaugh, hamstrung by the recruiting restrictions at Stanford, was able to just pound Pete Carroll seemingly every year. So now when I look at these two coaches on the sides, I'm like, looking, I'm like, I want to be on Jim Harbaugh's side because I feel he's got the definite advantage.
Dig what Jim Harbaugh has the potential to do. NFC title game first year, Super Bowl loser the second, win in his third year. That's a pretty impressive three-year run, especially if he can take down Belichick head-to-head. If he does, if he beats Manning, takes down Peyton Manning in the Super Bowl, either way, it's going to be hard to argue against Jim Harbaugh. All right, EH, here we go now. Your pick. Are you going to throw the flag or agree?
I'm going to throw the flag at our host because he's ruining the NFL.com picks column hours before it's supposed to be released. So...
people won't start. Who knows when people are going to listen to this podcast? Maybe they're listening to it Sunday morning as they get their brain ready. Yeah. You know, maybe they're standing in a parking lot in Seattle or Denver right now listening.
I think this is how super fan Neil Dutton pregames. He listens to it Saturday night in Great Britain. Am I getting the times wrong?
He's in Liverpool, I think. Yeah,
is he
one of our fans? Yeah,
yeah. Well, he would listen. Yeah, no, you're right. You're right.
It would be Saturday.
It'd be Saturday night for us. Yes, Sunday morning for him. Yeah, yeah.
I know. I'm going to get it wrong.
All right, make your pick because I have a question, EH. I do have something I really do want to ask about.
Well, I reserve the right to change my mind by the time that I release my article.
All right.
Because I have gone back and forth. But right now, I am pocketing that red flag, and I am agreeing with our colleague over here, Adam Rank.
Boo! I want disagreement.
I never disagree.
You don't.
I agree with everything you're saying, and I'm just like to add one thing, too. So you talked about Bolden having the great postseason. What made Bolden's postseason so great last year was that Flacco could throw the ball to him when he was covered. Mm-hmm. I mean, those catches that he made, there's a guy right on him. He does not care. He meets the ball. He positions his body. Crabtree does the same thing. He attacks the football. What is Seattle secondary known for? Having blanket coverage, being all over you, being feisty. I just don't see that bothering Crabtree and Bolden and Vernon Davis the way that it would Miles Austin, Dez Bryant, and Jason Witten, for example.
Give me, and without the quarterback, because that's too easy, what is the X factor to you then? Because to me, and I always will say this to the point of being annoying, it's one of my go-to things with the Niners. Vernon Davis is the most underappreciated tight end in the NFL, and I have to add him to one of the five most underrated guys in the NFL. It's always been Gronkowski. Who do you like, Gronkowski or Jimmy Graham? Why is Vernon? I guess the numbers take him out of it, but in January he's productive. He has yet to really have a big one, though. Oh, he's 0-2 in these 49ers wins in terms of personal numbers. I think he breaks out. He's the X factor because, like you say, though that secondary can be brutal. Earl Thomas will be looking at him. But I think Vernon Davis is going to sneak behind him once and get one. EH, who's your X factor in this one?
Well, I definitely like Vernon Davis as an X factor, so I agree with you. But I'm going to go with the Seahawks NASCAR package. Their defensive rotation that they use, they get a little bit different pass rushers in there to go after the quarterback, and that's so important. When you're facing a guy like Kaepernick and you've played, 20 weeks of football, defensive linemen's legs are tired, man. You don't want to be chasing guys like Russell Wilson and Kaepernick all day. I love the way the Seahawks rotate their linemen, and that's going to be huge because that run that Kaepernick had against Green Bay is why they're here. That one that he got on the edge late in the wild card, fresh legs can prevent something like that.
Yeah, it's
very reminiscent of the Cowboys of the 90s, the way they would rotate guys like Tony Casillas, Chad Henne. Wait, is that right? No, Chad Henning.
Chad Hennings,
Jim Jeffcoat
was a backup, and their starters were Haley and Tolbert.
Russell Maryland.
They had Leon Lett as well.
They just had all these defensive linemen.
They had Jimmy Jones. He scored a touchdown in the Super Bowl. They had eight legitimate guys, and they would bring in four new guys. I mean, come on. Jeffcoat had over 10 sacks as a complete backup.
Was that Tony Tolbert? No, he was later. He was.
No, you're right. No, Tolbert started on
Tony Tolbert, yeah.
Number 92.
Yeah.
He started.
Here's my question. Here's my question that I want to I want to figure this out. It can't be scientific. It's purely based on our respective anecdotes and our interactions, I suppose, primarily through social media. But we're worldly fellows. We've been around the block. We've met fans from all over these United States. What of the four? Who do you, for the fans, remove whatever else, what fan base deserves it the most? Who would you like to see win it? The Niners fans are easy to dismiss because they've had a lot to celebrate over the years. And so have the I guess the easy answer is Seattle, huh? Because they don't have a ring.
They have the 12th man and everything. But
they have a chip on their shoulder as a result. They love to stir it up online like few other fan bases. Mm-hmm.
They really do. And that's one of the things, like, for all that I like to talk and run down the 49ers and make fun of their guys and talk about how painful it was rooting against the 49ers in the 80s and the 90s, their fans are pretty cool. I seemingly never get bludgeoned by a 49ers fan who will come. Like, I cannot even recall. Like, last week it was the Panthers fans who were all upset with me. But Seahawks fans, if you say anything wrong, they come after you.
You don't have to say anything wrong. They get angry at you. You don't. Oh, you said you like the Niners. You don't respect us. It has nothing to do with a lack of respect. I literally retweeted our pal Ross Tucker. Had a great little number. Dig this. You know how people love to hold up when people, Lakers wonks like yourself, Rank, like to say the Lakers are the best organization in professional sports. And the reason they cite is the percentage of times that they visit the conference finals and the finals is off the charts. How about this number? I don't know how I didn't know these numbers specifically. Did you know Brady has played in 2/3 of the title games available to him during his career? That's a remarkable number, and you can give the credit to Belichick or whoever else you want, but the QB's pulling the trigger. That's an amazing stat. And if he wins this Sunday, he'll have played in half of the available Super Bowls to him during his career. I retweet that. The guy retweets me and Ross Tucker with the hashtag Peyton Haters. That has nothing to do with sometimes I feel like maybe it isn't me. Maybe it is other people deciding to put whatever story they want on it.
And that almost makes me want to root for the Patriots. Now, it's hard for me to root for Boston sports franchises, but I was pulling for the Patriots back in 2001, and I've almost swung all the way back around to where it's like, yeah, I do kind of want to see Brady get this, because I feel you talk about Jim Harbaugh's amazing run in the first 3 years of his coaching career in the NFL, and like, he will be challenging to be one of the greatest coaches of all time as long as he continues on this clip. But Bill Belichick's teams,
I know, it's
are
crazy.
In the playoffs every the one year they don't make it, it's because Tom Brady's injured, and yet they still go 11-5 with Matt Cassel. Like, you cannot tell
it
me.
Is remarkable, and there will be a time for this discussion, but when this is done, because I declared, and you know me, when, like Jerry Orbach at the end of Dirty Dancing, when I'm wrong, I say I'm wrong. I declared 1 year ago, this is officially the end of the Patriots era. This 21st century, Brady and Belichick, always, I thought somebody might come up and get them in the East, maybe, but I thought they would be one and done maybe in the playoffs. Here they are once again, though. You know, they're doing it again.
And you'll be saying the same next year. Because
it's so easy to say they're done. They're done again. I'm tempted.
Drinking that Kool-Aid. Do you know why you'll be saying it again this year, next year? Because they're in a weak division, guys. In weak division, not that great a conference. They're a good team. But let's not act like the past of this all-time great.
I agree with that.
That's a clear Patriots hater right there.
It's not. No, they're a good team. But imagine if they were, at the very least, maybe in the AFC North.
I agree with that point. I think the thing that has benefited, and this, I know you hate the Patriots and you hate the Broncos, but the thing that has benefited Brady and Manning with those, it at least deserves acknowledgement, is that they both have benefited from being in lousy divisions for the entirety of their respective careers. Yeah, they have not been in, I almost said NFC East, but that hasn't exactly been gangbusters the last couple of years. But you get the point.
But even in those divisions, you get tricky matchups, though. Like, what the Pats have had to deal with the last couple of years, I don't know. I feel like the Cowboys have the up and downs. Even the Redskins have the hot streak last year. The Giants, I mean, come on.
All right, I hear
you. But he's getting to the conference title games. It's not like they're going one and done like somebody in the other half of the AFC championship bracket.
I was going to say that you regarding your fan base question. I wish we could just give it to the Browns, no matter who wins it.
Well, I don't want to give away, but so what? I will give it away. That reminds me to self promote new NFL out for you this week at the darkest hour in in a city filled with them in sports terms. I did a little. One for the Cleveland Browns fans. I reversed the drive. I took the drive away from John Elway in 1986 and projected out how NFL history might look a little different. And spoiler alert, things go well for the Browns. That's all. That's all I'm going to say about it.
But do the Browns really look bad for what they're doing right now, waiting for one of the coordinators from the Final Four teams?
It seems bad that they haven't pounced because of anxiety of public perception. They've stayed the course.
And I like the letter that they sent out, and they didn't hire Jim Caldwell. I feel win-win.
I think the Zimmer hire is going to work out the best. Real quick, what does everybody think before we move to the AFC? EH, which of these – it's funny because I joked on the Sheck Report, Shame Report a few weeks ago after Black Monday that it just looked like this was shaping up to be, just retread Central this year. It has to some degree been about that. You have Bill O'Brien in Houston now. You have Caldwell to Detroit, which I feel is terribly uninspired. Wisenhunt, it's interesting. I assume that's a lifestyle choice that his family or his wife or lived in that neck of the woods, so he likes it there. But clearly
I read a report that he got an extra mil a year.
Is that right?
Tennessee. So of course
that lifestyle. Team's ready, built to make a play. I make a run at the division in 2014. EH, what coach hire do you like the best so far?
Well, I like O'Brien in Houston the best. As far as Wisenhunt, I'm fascinated to see how the Chris Johnson deal is going to play out.
Right.
Because Wisenhunt did an outstanding job with the Chargers running backs this year. I mean, if you've watched a lot of their games, how good was Ryan Matthews this year? How good was Danny Woodhead this year? How good was Ronnie Brown in the playoffs this year? I'm really curious to see what he's going to do there. But I wanted to just circle back. I was going to, when you asked about the fan base.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
The Seahawks fan base, we think of them now, right? But the 12th man is not a recent development. I just wrote something on Bill Parcells. That year the Giants won their first Super Bowl in 86. They went on this tremendous run. The last game they lost that year was at the Kingdom. Seahawks fans were rabid back in the 80s.
That ain't
Dave
jive.
Craig. Yeah. I mean, playing at the Kingdom was a road trip you did not want to take. It was a long flight if you're an East Coast team, and they were loud. And if I'm not mistaken, it was because of the Kingdom crowd that the NFL started instituting that penalty where when the quarterback – remember back in the 80s, the quarterback would look back at the ref and say, I can't hear? Mm-hmm. And they started having to ask the crowd to quiet down. I'm pretty sure that was because of Seattle.
What I remember – that place was always – and those teams were – almost perennially lousy, but yeah, that joint was always loud. And some of my earliest Monday Night Football memories are in the early days of the Seahawks when Jack Patera was their coach.
Yes.
He was a Zoftic guy on the sidelines, and I don't know why, but the Seahawks would get on Monday Night Football, but they weren't good, so I don't know why they would get on there once a year.
They got pretty good with Chuck Knox, though. I mean,
then they were fine. But with Jack Patera, the thing I always remember about him was when they would play, they were on Monday Night Football. It was always in Seattle, and he would always run a trick play with the special teams. That was his thing. And they would talk about it like, well, it's Monday Night Football, so Jack Patera is going to run a trick play on the special teams. And they always would do it, and it always worked. I think he was like 3 for 3, which is weird. By the third time, you think like, hey, let's just put a safety back like 15 yards. Nope, they would run a fake, and it would always work for him.
It was like watching Sting fall for the heel turn year after year.
Are you talking about the Police?
Sure.
Yeah? Stuart Copeland?
You know the guys who like wrestling will tweet me and be like, that was a great, the perfect reference.
I know. I see the tweets. I see what happens here.
Oh,
follow Rank, by the way, at Adam Rank and Elliot Harrison. At Harrison
underscore
NFL. I forget. I don't know what it is. It's hard to remember.
Just don't say it at all.
Oh, it's not nice to have your Twitter things?
Not when you butcher it and then complain about my underscore.
I wasn't going to complain. I was just trying to get it.
It's at Harrison underscore NFL.
All right, let's get
to it. So should I have the double wins? I'm throwing this out to you. Should I have Harrison NFL? That's what you said before, but then there's that confusing, do we type both ends?
Can't you make it? The best thing is, because wouldn't you get extra characters, which is, which is like gold on Twitter, because 140 characters.
Rank, don't you think that's confusing?
If your name is, if my Twitter name is Damashek, if it was Dave Damashek, would I lose those four characters on the rest of the tweet?
Ooh, I don't know.
Because if you could go EHNFL, then you want it. Then you save the character. That doesn't work.
I never thought of that one. That's not.
I can't. That's why I never tweet Akbar.
Is that true?
It says too many characters already.
Our social media guru.
No, once you it doesn't affect your word count or letter count. If you retweet something that has your name in it,
right.
Then it obviously
that's
does.
Where it is.
But I always wanted EH. Why don't you just go with Harrison NFL?
That's what I was just asking. Rank is that if the double ends, do you double end it up?
You go lowercase n and full uppercase NFL.
EHNFL. That's the easiest one to remember.
What do you vote?
Because it's easy to remember.
EHNFL.
I like EHNFL.
It looks like.
That'd be so great.
I will change.
Sounds like NFL.
Done.
Or it kind of sounds like NFL. Do it the other way. Yeah. NFL. All right. Let's talk about the AFC title game. Yes.
By the way, follow NFL.com live on Twitter because. That's the new hashtag handle of the show that we'll be doing.
Yeah, Wednesday through Friday, Super Bowl week on Media Row, third year of doing it. And, what is it, noon Eastern, 9 a.m.?
Noon to 3. NFL Live, NFL.com Live, Super Bowl 48. You know, you guys.
But the Twitter handle is NFL.
It's just com live.
All right, let's jump to it. AFC Mile High. All the noise goes away. Well, no, it'll be loud in the stadium. I don't mean that, but I mean the chatter from the likes of me about this game. All the talk, like I say, Brady could go to half the Super Bowls available to him if he can get the trip this time. Peyton Manning, of course, looking to get there. I'll give my thoughts in a second. EH, give me your pick. Broncos hosting the Patriots.
I'll be perfectly honest. I have changed my mind on this game like 10 times. But right now, I'm sticking with Denver. I'm sticking with a home team. The reason I've changed my mind is I'm worried New England has been running the ball so well that I could see them just running it and running it and running it and running it and playing keep away. But right now, I like the home team because the matchup's so close. What's the first thing you should look at? Home road.
All right. Interesting analysis. I will hold mine until we hear from Rank, who, it is worth noting, picked the Broncos to be watching this game on TV while the Chargers move on. Chargers at Foxborough really
that
came
wasn't a, bad
a little
pick.
Bit closer than I mean, you know, by at the end of the third quarter, you thought, well, this game is anticlimactic, and then the Chargers made their push, but Peyton drilled a couple of throws there. On the drive and salted the thing away there with the win in question. Rank, Brady v. Manning. Just say Tom Brady already because I know where you're going.
I know. I don't want to belabor the point, but what I do want to bring up when you talk about the Patriots running the ball so well and LeGarrette Blount has just become like the second coming of Marion Motley all of a sudden out there running the ball very well. And this is the type of game where everybody will go into it talking about Blount and whatever. He'll have four carries. And what they will do is they'll line him up and they'll look for Quentin Jammer, who is now the injury replacement for Chris Harris, and they will probably target him 60 times. Julian Edelman will have 500 receiving yards, and that's how the Patriots will beat him. Because there is no coach, and we talk about best coaches around, there is no coach who can flip the script so much like Bill Belichick. Think about it. Last year, everybody thought he was nuts when he drafted those two tight ends, when he brought in Hernandez and Gronkowski. And last year, that team did so well. The last couple of years, doing so well, utilizing those two tight ends. Revolutionary offense, the way they're running it. This year, loses all of those guys. They signed Danny Amendola to come in. He's been gone for most of the year. They've been winning with Kembrell Tompkins.
Dobson's been hurt.
Dobson. Julian Edelman.
Let me tell you something about Julian
Matthew
Edelman,
Slater.
By the way. It didn't hit my brain that Julian Edelman had 104 catches until last week. It didn't really hit.
Because it doesn't mean the same thing.
I know, but it didn't. But still, it's a remarkable thing. And I compared it to cross the sports streams. I compared it to what that says about Tom Brady. 100-plus balls to Julian Edelman is the equivalent of, dare I say, call me a homer, but Mario Lemieux making goal scores out of absolute nobodies like he did with Warren Young. In his rookie season, a bum, a journeyman minor leaguer named Warren Young scored 40 goals on 66's wing. That says so much about Brady that he could do that with a guy like Edelman. I think it's interesting rank, like you say. And the thing has become about, and we've known this for some years, but for some reason I've heard a lot of that this year, is that, boy, those Patriots really know how to take away the other team's best. That's the story we keep hearing. Oh, they're not going to let – if T.Y. Hilton is the killer for on that team, that's the one guy that you can be sure is not going to kill them. I think also what they do is what Peyton Manning has always given so much credit for, which is finding the weakness and just attacking it until you stop it. And as far as that goes, I hear your noise on Quentin Jammer. I mean, once the Chargers figured that out, maybe it's simplistic, but once the Chargers figured that out, they just went at him the rest of the game and they had no answer to it. Now, Champ Bailey may move over is the buzz. And it's not like there's great depth among the pass catchers with the Patriots. I just have a feeling, like you say, and the other thing you said, I've asked Heath Evans this, who has been around Belichick, and you talk about a Belichick file. Heath Evans, who spent some time with the Patriots, including that almost undefeated team, boy, he loves his Belichick, and he can really tell you where his head's at. He'll tell you that if LeGarrette Blount was the guy pounding it last week, that's what the Broncos are getting ready for. Then Belichick's getting Shane Vereen ready to go. That's what he's going to do. Is that you talk about flip the script. Everybody in the world's ready for LeGarrette Blount. Hey, here's Shane Vereen to be. You didn't account for that. That's what the prediction is for. That's what Heath Evans told me. I think the Patriots are going to do it. I think Brady, again, for what it's worth, that underdog thing, historically, when he's an underdog, the Patriots don't lose in the playoffs. So I'm inclined to go that way. And I think Von Miller's absence is going to make it so that Brady has an extra half second. And if he has an extra half second, I think that's enough for him to pick him apart. But I don't know that either defense is going to be especially effective against these guys.
Let me just say this to you. I wrote this before the Patriots played the Colts. Obviously, Tom Brady is the big talking point. But the reason why the Patriots have won outside of Tom Brady is takeaways. They're
yes.
always at the top in takeaways. Over the last 5 years, they have 170 takeaways. That's 34 a year. Okay, they're always at or near the top of the charts. And look what happened to the Amish sex symbol last week. He threw 4 interceptions. You know, everyone was all over him, you know, about how great he was. And I was saying, like, look, I would not take Andrew Luck over Phillip Rivers right now. I wouldn't. Because Phillip Rivers is not going to do anything to hurt the Chargers. He will keep them in that game. Whereas Andrew Luck will have the huge stats at the end of the game, but he might have thrown 2 or 3 interceptions the first half. I believe he had 4 mm-hmm. last week. Didn't he have 3 against the Chiefs? You cannot do that against the Patriots. So if Peyton Manning gets in one of these modes where he's frustrated, every once in a while Peyton Manning will do that.
Don't say it. Don't say anything bad about him.
No.
Gotcha.
Don't bring up that interception he almost threw in the first drive against the Chargers last week.
If New England gets 2 takeaways or more, they're winning this game.
You know, it's funny because that brings it full circle to where you and I, EH, were in August. You and I did a podcast. And to me, I said the same thing. I feel like this idea of you need this statistically dominant defense is outmoded thinking. There's clearly, you can go through the last, whatever, 4 or 5 off the top of my head. I'm not sure. I'd have to look at all the teams. But if you look at the Final Fours involved in the last, I don't know, 3 seasons or 5 seasons, it's not like everybody there has some dominant defense. This thing of, like I said earlier, this run the ball on offense and dominate defensively, that's how you win championships. It's just not true anymore. It's not the case. And to that point, you know, the Steelers have been up there defensively, but it means nothing because they don't take the ball away. I think Belichick did figure that out. I've badmouthed Belichick and said, if he's such a genius and his specialty is defense, why are they never ranked in the top 5 anymore? They haven't been in 9 years. Mm-hmm. I think he figured something out. It's to the thing that you said in August. It's about playmakers now. It's not about the unit dominating necessarily so much as it is making plays and taking the ball away. That's the, you know, I say also, another thing I say is, I feel like if a guy fell into a coma 25 years ago, a big football fan, and he woke up, the things he would notice, one, there are a lot more running QBs, one, and two, every defensive player just strips at the ball constantly. They don't make they're not great tacklers. Well, you know, Luke Kuechly accepted and a few other guys. But, I mean, you know, what they're all doing is trying to take the ball away. And the Bears get a lot of credit for it. But it's the Patriots who, even though statistically their numbers are pedestrian, if not bad, you look at them and they're like, oh, yeah, that's what they do. They take the ball away all day long.
Yeah. Rank, you love history. you think of like the 82-83 Redskins. Everyone always thought about Riggins, Theismann, Art Monk, the Hogs. That team, they had their punter do the kickoffs. So because Mark Mosley couldn't get it deep, so they played field position, and they had a plus 46 turnover diff.
Mm.
That's insane. That's the way you win. You get a kickoff, a kicker that can boom it. You get a punter that can get it inside the 20 without fail. Morstead's a very good punter, for example, in New Orleans. And you get takeaways. You do those three things, and you rotate your defensive linemen to keep them fresh. I guess that's four things. That right there will win you a lot more ball games than leading the NFL in yards per game allowed, which is how the NFL ranks defense.
Well, fellas, it's been a great conversation. Let's wrap it up with this before we hear from Suggs and Roddy White on their remembrances from last year and how it'll affect things. And like I say, make sure you check out at NFL.com/check because the conversation was really good. Black Tie was there. It was interesting, right? The Ray Lewis. Suggs and I got into it
a little bit. Don't give it away.
I'm not giving anything away. I just want to tell you one thing. I just want to tell you one thing about Suggs. I asked him about the histrionics, the dancing here and there and everywhere from Ray Lewis. I said, does that matter at all, really? That's what we talked about. He suddenly we'd been talking for 10, 15 minutes at that point. All of a sudden, he suddenly got suspicious. And he said, where are you from? And I told him, don't worry about where I'm from. Then I told him the news. You know, I don't like jive, so I felt I had to meet him halfway. I told him where I was from. Went downhill from there.
Oh, you know?
Yeah, well.
Did it really?
Well, no, it went fine. But yeah, that was, you know, we got into it a little bit, right? What do you think, Black Tie? Was it interesting to you?
Good stuff. Let's have the people take a listen.
Oh, come on. Listen, I'm allowed to tell a story about something.
Here's
the last thing I want to ask, because reality will erase the other options. I wrote something back in June about the best possible Final Fours that you could have. There were eight scenarios. And by the way, the thing that actually I look back at it today, the thing that is interesting is, wouldn't it have been fun with a Super Bowl in New York that there are two teams that play in that same stadium? If the championship games, if the Jets and Giants had hosted those, so in title game weekend, you'd have back-to-back games. What would they do? They'd have to play back-to-back games, Jets and Giants. Wonder if they would flip, like, would one end zone be green and the other be blue?
What is their contingency plan for that?
Play two Saturday games. And Sunday?
You think so?
Yeah.
Why? What would the field?
By the way, I think would be awesome.
I kind of agree, but why wouldn't they be able to just play on the same field? What would be the difference? You'd have, but imagine, all right, Jets fans, get out of here. We got another game. And then they'd have to, like, turn them over the next 90 minutes or whatever. That'd be fascinating. And then play the Super Bowl 2 weeks later. And if it were the Jets and Giants, even better. But anyway, so I laid all these out, the different matchups, what would be most interesting, you know, in terms of storylines. What to you is the Super Bowl based on these four teams? Which is the one that you most want to see here?
I really do want to see the 49ers and the Patriots, because I do feel the two best coaches in the NFL right now are Jim Harbaugh, Bill Belichick, and this could be a kind of pass the torch type moment. And you, like you said, though, you said you could get it either way, no matter who Jim Harbaugh would beat. But this would really be a pass the torch moment if we went Harbaugh versus Belichick, Tom Brady going up against the team that didn't draft him. You know, everybody talks about the 49ers passed on Aaron Rodgers. They also passed on Tom Brady because they drafted, Jim Druckenmiller?
Right.
Was he the guy who was drafted that year or whoever it was? So Tom Brady, another lifelong 49ers fan type of thing, getting his chance to finally get revenge on the team that, yeah, I know every team passed on him, but the one that really sticks with
him. By the way, everybody talks about that, oh, well, Brady and Manning could still do it next year. I really do think next year they add one receiver, one defensive, one nice playmaker on defense. I think the Indianapolis Colts are kind of poised to really go one more. And the Texans are interesting, too. If they go J.J. Watt, Jadeveon Clowney, egad. I mean, well, they don't know how much do they have to score. As long as they don't turn it over, they're going to dominate. E.H., what's your
name? By the way, I did want to say it was Gio Kermazzi was the guy that they drafted.
Gio
Kermazzi. Oh, quick
point. A producer pointed it out, not the one who is, you know, supposed to be the guy.
Actually, the
stuff
original
up.
Producer of the
Necktie Miller.
Back, with back me. There.
I just wanted to add a little tidbit there. From the coach's show earlier this week, Coach Mariucci actually mentioned that.
Your favorite show.
Yeah, of course. Coach Mariucci mentioned that how not drafting Tom Brady is still one of his worst regrets. He wakes up every morning and says hello to his wife and goes, I regret not drafting Tom Brady.
So we should bring that up to him when we see him in the halls
now. Why should I listen to you? You passed on Tom Brady for Gio Kermazzi.
Yeah.
You know? It's that sort of thing. It's sort of like Jay Gruden. I don't understand why the Bengals hired him. It's, he has experience, and he's not. Yeah, but he's the one guy who we know is 0-3. Shouldn't we hire, just walk up to people at random on the street and hire them? Because one thing that we do know is that Jay Gruden is not capable of doing it. So he's been ruled out now. Go anywhere but that guy, in a way.
Who brought up the point of, like, Jay Gruden brought in tape of Andy Dalton and said, see how terrible this guy is?
Ross Tucker. Yeah. That was Ross Tucker who said that.
I've gone to the playoffs.
It's a great line. E.H., which is the most compelling?
Well, first I have to say that if I were Steve Mariucci's wife, the first thing I would say is, which round? I always think that's funny. Like, I really regret drafting. Really? Do you regret it in the second round, or was it the third round? Or how about the fourth round when you passed on him? Really? How about the fifth round? Or did you pass him over in the sixth? I agree with Adam. San Francisco, New England. I wanted San Francisco, New England a couple years ago when San Francisco lost to the Giants on that Ahmad Bradshaw play. They called that his forward progress had been stopped. Looked like he had fumbled that game. And then the Kyle Williams. Everyone remembers the Kyle Williams plays, but that Bradshaw play was huge. Mm-hmm. I wanted it back then.
Yep.
We didn't get it last year. There wasn't really a lot of drama because New England kind of got hammered by Baltimore last year in the championship. I think that's just a great – I mean, think about it. You've got five rings going – Go ahead.
I was going to say, don't you feel like when Tlaib went out, that was the turning point of that game?
Oh, man. That and you know, people have a lot of things to say about Bernard Pollard, including Steeler fans, but that hit that he laid on Stephen Ridley was just set the tone for the game. And then we mentioned it earlier.
Does that affect Wes Welker going forward? I suspect it does. You know, if you remember, Wes Welker dropped a couple of balls in that
game.
I'll
be honest with you. I mean, I respect Wes Welker, but I just don't look at Wes Welker as a difference maker football player.
I don't want to get grim, but I just think he should have retired. I mean, he's gotten bonked one too many times at least.
I'm just saying I don't know how much 6 yard ins and 9 yard outs really affect a football game.
Let me say this. I think the game. I'm conflicted about – this is a paradox. I think that the NFC team is going to win the Super Bowl, whichever one it is. Whoever they play, I think the NFC is going to beat the AFC. Mm. However, if I'm wrong about that, I bet you it's a blowout in the other direction. The Broncos are much – here's the scenario. As much as I've said over the last 12 months or so, Peyton Manning – struggles in January when it's cold and there's pressure and all that. I do think if he gets past Tom Brady here, there's a chance that if early in the game against Seattle he gets it going, I could see them putting 50 on that team. I could see them hanging a big number on it and it being like, take that, world. I don't ever want to hear about you can't win in the cold or win the big game ever again. And in which case, like the late, great Jerry Orbach, when I'm wrong, I say I'm wrong. And I'll say it in this case. But I want to see... And the other thing is, I just don't think Seattle can keep up with them. I just straight up, the defense can play great. I don't think they ultimately would be able to put up enough points to be in a game with the Broncos. But I do think the Niners could do that. So I think I don't want the Niners to win, but I think that would make for a better match.
But Seattle would be able to run on Denver like nobody's business.
I don't think they'd house them like that. And Denver's been good against the run. Their defense is deficient on the back end, and I think that Tom Brady might have his way with them, but they do stop the run. The idea that the Patriots and Broncos are just going to run at each other all day, I think the Broncos are much better suited to shut that down than the other way around. I think that's one thing I've been saying for 6 weeks too. Somebody's going to gash that Patriots team on the ground and finish them. And the last team to do that was the Broncos in Foxborough the night that they blew that huge lead. That might happen, even though I'm picking the Patriots. I wouldn't be surprised if they pound them real good on the ground.
I think that New England could beat Seattle. I do. I know Seattle beat them up in Seattle last year. I think it was by 1 point. Russell Wilson had to lead them back. But New England can run the football, and that's going to make those – if they play each other, those pass rushers are going to have to think about it. They're going to have to honor it. And I just don't think you intimidate Tom Brady. And Seattle does live partially off the noise that they create. In the Super Bowl, you're not going to have that. So if Tom Brady wants to change the play at the line, he can do it.
It's like we said. It's phony when athletes say, and there are a sect of them who will claim, I don't hear the noise. I don't listen to the media. I don't hear the fans. I don't hear the negativity. Yes, you do. So stop lying and saying that you don't, because you absolutely, in the 21st century, do. You used to be a newspaper and the local news, if you could avoid those things. You don't miss it now. You hear it. Now it's a matter of, does it get in your head and affect you negatively, or do you use it as a positive? I don't know about Peyton Manning. I've made it clear what I think how it affects him, but I know that Tom Brady is one of those winners who uses it as fuel. He'll play with a chip on his shoulder. Dare him, try and stack eight men in the box on him, and dare Tom Brady to beat you, you're going to lose. That's my prediction. I don't think they're just going to concede the pass and see if Brady can get it done. I think if they do, that will be their mistake, and they shall lose the game.
Real quick. We had people vote on NFL.com/check, and the past Niners, which all you guys want to see apparently, is dead last. And the top vote at 40%, Broncos versus Seahawks.
Listen, they're all good games. There's not a bad one. I throw that out because it's fun to talk about, because come Monday, that conversation goes away. So, all right. So now let's do it. Black Tie, do you know what we're doing here? What noise we're going to hear from Suggs and
Roddy?
Yeah,
this is Roddy White and Terrell Suggs talking about Tom Brady. Suggs talking about why he loves, I'm being sarcastic, why he doesn't like Tom Brady. And also Roddy White talking about his rivalry with Richard Sherman, who will be playing this weekend as well.
All right, a little sample here of our latest Inside Out. Hi and hello and welcome to Inside Out. I am joined right now on the cusp of the two title games this Sunday by two guys who played in last year's title games, Terrell Suggs, Roddy White. What's the poop, fellas? How are we?
Doing great.
Good. Doing great. Doing marvelous.
Roddy White, last year you did battle in front of the 49ers game with the Seahawks, of course. And trash talker supreme these days is Richard Sherman. What does he say? What actually is he saying to you when you're pitted against one another?
That's the funny part is he talks like through hand signals and gestures. Not really too much in the game, you know, unless he makes a play, you know, and other than that, he doesn't really say a lot, you know, and they're kind of like the Seahawks, not to say anything bad about them, but they're front runners. Like when they're winning.
Not and to say anything bad about them, though.
When they're winning, everything's going good. They jump around, they yell and scream. But when they're not winning, then there's not too much of that going on.
Well, that's anybody, you know.
But, you know, throughout the game, you know, we were winning the whole game and we got up, you know, really right there, you know, was up 17-0. So, you know, I didn't hear a lot out of him, you know, through the first three quarters.
Well, did you throw anything back at him when you were in the lead?
Yeah, I'm always talking.
Oh, yeah?
I say some things to him.
Like what? What are they saying? Suggs, you're a big talker, too. What do you say to the foes?
I don't know. It's something you gather during the week, you know. Maybe a guy got dunked on or something in high school or something. You know, you find something. It all depends on the guy. It definitely depends on the team. Because, you know, you despise some teams more than others. So,
yes, you do.
You know, it all depends. It all depends.
I love, by the way, how you love rivalries. You don't shy from them. You love it. Your two biggest rivals, Pittsburgh and New England, what is it with you and Brady? It seems like there's legitimate animosity there. True or false?
True.
You don't like them. Why?
But I'm getting over it. You know, I'm seeing my therapist. You know, I'm going to my classes for it. And, you know, it all started, like they say, one incident. You know, it's all NFL history. You know, just like when they was going for that undefeated year, you know, the timeout, you know, everything that went into that, the whole knee pointing, you know, the Brady rule, you know, just everything.
Well, what's he say back when you bring that stuff up to him? I see him flapping his gums all the time.
Yeah, you know, he gives it back. You know, he say some few choice words, not, you know, we can't say on air, but I like it though.
Damn a shake, David, damn a shake.
Nice fellas. Not unlike Tom Brady and Terrell Suggs, who've developed a little respect for each other. I developed a little more respect for Terrell Suggs. That's all I'm going to say. Watch the videos and you'll see that we kibitz a little bit about our own personal rivalry. And what were punches thrown? Maybe, maybe not, and I'm not allowed to say anything more about it. But Elliot Harrison, dynamite stuff as usual, NFL.com. You got anything up there right now? You got your picks, of course.
Yeah, power rankings are probably still up right now, but picks will be up on Thursday afternoon.
All right, thanks for coming into 66. And Rank, how say you? What do you got up there?
If you're into Madden 25, we've got a couple of things that we did this week. We projected a couple of the rookies where I see their ratings opening up in 2014, and of course we will do our Madden ratings update and predictions heading into the championship weekend.
All right, and we got all sorts of junk up there, the Sheck Report and the NFL I mentioned, these inside outs up there, or at least one or two of those will be up there, so check all those out. I'll have my picks up there for you, but you just heard what they were. I say Patriot. So bad day for the home fans. The home fans all go home sad. The sad 47-year-old man who carries probably 40 pounds too many and it painted his face for the game full of hope and optimism walks out sad, and there's no sadder sight on the face of the earth than a 47-year-old man coming down a little bit from his beer high that he established about 4 hours prior. Sad, dreams dashed. Sorry, I think that's how it's going to go. Yes, Black Tie.
You can always join the show, hashtag DDFB, questions, comments, jokes, you know, join in. Also, as you said earlier, NFL.com Live, Super Bowl 48, that's coming up in a couple of weeks here. Dave Damashek, Adam Rank, Molly Carroll, Matt Money Smith, follow at NFL.com Live and stay up to date with all the playoffs and Super Bowl news and jokes you want to hear.
Black Tie brings it home. Enjoy your games, everybody. Two left this weekend, then one more Super Bowl, and then we'll worry about what's on the other side of that later. We'll talk about movies and stuff. You know, I'm looking forward to that, in fact. A lot of movies to talk about. All right, listen, enjoy your games. We'll be back on the other side of the title games. In the meantime, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.